Bradley University, this is Outside the Horseshoe. I'm Tanya Coombs. The Peoria Housing Authority is looking to demolish Taft Homes, more than 200 barrack-style apartments. The agency will also be selling the 20 acres of Riverview property with close interstate access. That means PHA is looking for places to build 5 or 6 new apartment complexes throughout the city. 3 pieces of property have been identified as possible sites. 3 public information meetings have been held in neighborhoods in each of those sites. The meeting last night ended with some raised voices, some considered vehement opposition to the third proposed site at 3772 Brandywine Drive. First District Peoria City Councilwoman Denise Moore and Assistant City Manager Chris Setti join us for this show to talk about what's turning out to be a controversial community issue. Welcome to Outside the Horseshoe. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We invited PHA representatives, and we had Brenda Coates slated, and we had Ken Zika as a backup. We wanted them to be part of the conversation. They wanted to be part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. Apparently, circumstances are such that that can't happen right mm-hmm. now. Councilwoman Moore, you've spoken to the sort of social, cultural judgments that seem to be being made while this is still just a conversation, proposals, in fact.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have. And what I have determined, having attended all 3 meetings, is that there are a group of folk who come who are very interested in finding out the facts, who are very interested in an academic discussion of how it would impact their communities. And for those folks, I'm very happy to see them come because they ask very good questions. And it helps. The reason the PHA is doing this is to get that level of conversation so that they can vet all issues around it. And so that when those people come, it's always good to have them there. However, there are other groups of folks who come not there to hear anything, not there to learn anything, simply there to fan the flames of race and class. And those people come, and they are rude, and they're inconsiderate and disrespectful, and it's like the group mentality. They embolden others who may not necessarily be at that level, but close. And so it's unfortunate that then those very intelligent people who come, who are looking at an academic discussion to determine what the truth is, they get drowned out, and the whole room then takes on a different flavor. The first meeting at Lake Street, I took my grandson there with me.
How old is he?
He's 6 years old.
Okay.
So he's 6 years old, and I just wanted him to see. He wants to see what Grandma does. And the feeling in the room, I'll say, was such that I determined it was necessary to take him home because I didn't want him to continue to experience what was going on at that location. And one of the comments that I made to some folks after I left there, I came back to finish the meeting. I said that the only thing missing from that Lake Street meeting were torches and pitchforks, and that it was appropriate for it to have been held in a funeral home because the death of civility happened there. And so that's unfortunate because it takes away from what the goal of the PHA is to, as Brenda Coates, the executive director, will tell you, many of the hardworking people who live in the Taft Homes area are hardworking folks who go to work every day and they raise their children and they don't want to cause any trouble anywhere, yet they are being painted with a broad brush by some of the naysayers who don't want anything to change from, you know, their 1950s view of life.
Let me try to share the primer. PHA Board Chairman Ken Zika has shared with me last night in our interview. More than half of the people who live in the Taft right now have lived there for less than 5 years.
Actually, 70% of the folks who live in Taft right now have been there 5 years or less.
Okay. Less than a third is how he put it, I believe, have cars, have transportation of their own.
Mm-hmm.
So walkability of their community is going to be important. When I walk in my community, I require that it be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's right.
That's a basic expectation I have as a taxpayer. Is there any reason to believe that
the people who live in Taft right now, when they move, that they wouldn't have the same expectation?
That's exactly right. And from these meetings, there have been people who have even mentioned what you said. Last night's meeting, there was someone who spoke up about where would the children play because they're so close to War Memorial, the sidewalks and the width of the streets. Those were very good items that came out of that meeting last night, and that's the purpose of these meetings.
And I asked Chairman Zika about that, mm-hmm. and he said, you know, in fact, Mr. Setti, they would be working with the city to make an effort to make all of the sidewalks around any of the housing that they would create as a result of demolishing the current Taft property. They would work to keep sort of the amenities and sort of the infrastructure of the community around it. They would work with the city to try to make that as walkable, as safe, as pedestrian-friendly as possible. Mm.
We're willing to work with anybody who'd like to install sidewalks and, you know, and create a pedestrian pathway, you know, but it is important for folks, especially folks that are lack the mobility of a car, to make sure that they have, you know, proper access to a bus route or to school or things like that. So certainly a role the city could play wherever, you know, wherever public housing or any housing might be is to ensure that, just like when we do development out in the 5th District, you know, in some of the growth cell areas, we require sidewalks to be put in certain ways. It's kind of the same thing that we would work with here.
That sometimes is something that takes a little while to achieve, but it's presumable to think that that would happen.
Sure.
Then the other thing that I think is important to talk about is the requirement to live in public housing is such that you cannot have a conviction on your record and reside in public housing without going through an appeal process in which the individual in question needs to be contributing to their community in a significant enough fashion that it overshadows the conviction.
That's
my
understanding.
There has to be a track record, and that's what Mr. Zika was explaining to mm-hmm. me. And the PHA of today is certainly not the PHA of 30 years ago.
That's right. That's very true. And I don't think what is being conveyed clearly are the number of elderly that are living in PHA who, quite frankly, won't be roaming up and down the streets in the middle of the night with friends coming over causing trouble. Excuse me. So the number of elderly that are in PHA housing that would seek to be relocated, I don't know if most folks know the number of veterans and disabled veterans that are living in PHA housing that would seek to be relocated. These are also individuals who are not out rowdy and shouting and doing those kinds of things. And so to some degree, the PHA understands that they have a PR problem, that a lot of folks know about public housing is what they read in the paper, what they see on television, and that's not the whole story. And one of the things that I said at the Gateway meeting was that we have to look in the mirror and determine, are we so perfect that we can't allow some blemishes on other people? That if we look in our family, everybody's got a crazy cousin or a drunk uncle or teenagers who have from time to time had a brush with the law, everybody. But when that same criteria is placed on Taft, then it's amplified to be something more than it is. And so what I don't mean to downplay the concerns of folks in other areas at all. I get the housing, the property value conversation. I get that. I get the safety issue, the crime. I get that because I have small children, as I indicated about my grandson. All I'm seeking is for civility in the conversation, in an academic discussion, much like what will have come out of some of these meetings, but they're overshadowed by some of the folks who they have no interest in having people who don't look like them live near them.
I think, if I'm interpreting this correctly, you're trying to say there's an important conversation still to be had. There are lots of details in each property site or proposed property site to be worked out.
Definitely. And as Brenda said last night, or Yvonne, it would be at the earliest 2015, at the earliest, before any of this would come to fruition, and probably much later.
So let's talk about that from a city perspective. Some of the details of moving some of these properties along, if some of the action is at least a year away, what role does the city have in this currently? Because eventually the city will need to rezone the property.
Sure.
Those kinds of questions will come up. But what role does the city play right now?
The zoning question is kind of parcel by parcel. And I think that, for instance, I believe the parcel on Northeast Jefferson is currently zoned properly. You know, it just like any property owner or just like any entity, the city can't prevent a separate institution, like whether it's the Housing Authority or Tanya Kuntz, LLC, from purchasing property. So there's nothing that we're going to be able to do that says you can't buy that property. It's not our role as this unit of government to do so. So the first is that the Housing Authority has to secure property. They would want to do so, I believe, and this is the reason they've had these meetings, with some assurances they can actually do something with it, because you don't want to buy a piece of property that then now you just own this vacant piece of property and can't execute your plan. So they would work with us on any zoning issues. In the city of Peoria, any multifamily plan, whether it is properly zoned or not, has to actually be approved by the Planning Commission. So no matter whether one of the spots is on Northeast Jefferson, I don't think any of these are preordained.
No.
These are locations they've identified and had some discussions. I don't think they've purchased any of these. They're just, you know, but just to use these three properties as examples,
sure,
are places that they would then likely come to the city and put forth their plan, and that would have to go to the Planning Commission. I think maybe one of the concerns is people believe that all 216 or 220 units at Taft are going to show up in one of their neighborhoods. I think one of the things that the PHA and their board and the federal government has been very clear about is the deconcentration of poverty. And that the idea is that if you could build smaller pockets of housing throughout the city, you won't have some of the issues, because we'd be lying if we said there was no issues at Taft, but a lot of the issues at Taft are about volume. You know, that many more people all congregating together, it only takes one or two bad apples, to spoil the rest of that bunch. And the idea is if you could split it up a little bit, it's much more manageable. And you're also giving people something new and has some dignity to it. I think that no one would tell you that the current housing option of Taft is terribly attractive to the folks that live there, to the community around it, to the city at large. People who are struggling to make their rent, you deserve to have housing that accommodates their needs at a basic level. We're not expecting mansions for everyone. But that also is dignified space for folks to live in. And so I think that's important. So the city's role here in the relocation of the Taft to one or more spots is going to be most likely on the planning and zoning side of things. I don't know if, apart from finding locations, what the Housing Authority really needs to do is figure out financing. And that's what they're in the process of doing is working with the state about their 9% low-income housing tax credits, but even that doesn't get them all the way. They all need to be able to find other sources of, whether it's conventional financing through a first mortgage, whether it's grants or other sorts of federal or state or local resources. I don't know what the role of the city will be in that regard. We don't have a lot of our own funds hanging around that are discretionary, but depending on where some of those locations are, we may be able to assist in other ways.
Friday, Moody's reviewed the city's request for $10 million in bonds for sewer projects and gave the city a decline in its rating. Now, in the whole scheme of things, it's not a huge decline. However, the idea that the city may be able to bond out for such a project is probably not the first thing that the city wants to consider.
I think that, like anything that the city does, we need to, concern ourselves with the impact those decisions make on the larger community.
Yes.
How any borrowing for anything, from something as essential as sewers to
basic
anything
and
else,
essential. Yes.
How that impacts our financial portfolio and our bond ratings and all of that. But what we're really looking at is return on investment. We are not in the habit of borrowing money simply to not be able to pay it back. So we'd have to make sure that whatever we were doing that for. But we do have there's other funds that are available that come to us, community development block grant money. There's what's called home money. I don't even know what that acronym stands for anymore. And, there may be other ways that the city could help leverage other dollars. Our position would be to see how we can be helpful when when they've made some more decisions. It's too early in the process for us to start saying, yes, we could do that. But we were a big help in the development of River West.
How so?
Before my time, and so I'm not exactly sure, but I believe we lent money that they have been paying back through their property taxes at River West through the Southtown
TIF. I believe that's the way it worked.
Yes.
And they were also the beneficiary of a large, what was at the time called Hope 6 grant,
right.
Yes.
To do that. That's a program that's no longer available through the federal government. But we would like to help find a solution for, higher quality, affordable housing in Peoria. And, it would be at the council's discretion how we would go about doing that.
To live in public housing today, people have to be making an effort to make themselves more self-sustainable. There are skill-based programs.
That's right. There are some people who do, let's be clear, there are some folks who live in public housing who, because of their disability, are not able to work. I spoke about some veterans, for instance, who may have had some injury, who may not be in a position to work or may be underemployed, mm-hmm. And cannot afford market rate rent, mm-hmm. but what is being lost in some of these meetings is that more than a third of the folks who live in TAF pay rent equal to anywhere in the city they could live, anywhere in the city. Whether they are invited to come to anywhere in the city is different than being able to go there. So these folks who are paying market rate rents, who may have cars or may not have cars, who are raising their families, who could live in the 5th District if they wanted to, will now be able to be moved to areas when the new construction happens that meets them where they are. Quite frankly, there are some people who live in Taft who make a better income than some of the areas that they're trying to build in Lake Street or Alford Memorial or Greeley School area.
The average base income in
exactly.
those neighborhoods.
Exactly. And so it's that painting with the broad brush that really has to stop. The PHA understands folks' concerns, as I said, about their property values, and they understand folks' concerns about safety, and they're trying to address those things. But the suggestions that are coming in that are academically based and bringing up issues that the PHA should continue to discuss is very good. I applaud the folks who come out to these, quite honestly, even though some of them are mean and nasty, I really like the fact that people in the community are finally getting involved in what's happening around them. That is awesome. I just ask that they channel that to something more constructive than throwing out slings and arrows and verbal abuse and nasty comments.
What can people anticipate seeing at the city level related to this idea? What can we expect to see next?
As I understand it, the Housing Authority is seeking a co-developer. I think they had final interviews last week, and they're just finalizing the selection process.
Some legal issues is
right.
what they tell me.
And so once that person is selected, they'll be making application to the state of Illinois for these low-income housing tax credits. I'm not sure exactly what the next stage of the official city involvement is. We've obviously been engaged with them as they go through a site selection process.
Sure.
And we will be engaged with them on the zoning and the planning side when those decisions are made. Our council's been very engaged. I think there were 4 or 5 members of council there last night.
Five.
I know that there were a number at both of the other meetings as well. So it's obviously an issue that's of significant importance to a lot of different folks in the city, from the citizens that are currently living at Taft,
certainly.
The people who are living in these neighborhoods where the folks where these folks may be relocated. It's a broad discussion. It has a lot of implication, and it's something the city will have to take very seriously when it comes to our role in supporting affordable housing in terms of planning and zoning review or any financial assistance, which we haven't even really broached that subject with them yet.
Not
far enough down the road.
Has the city, in your knowledge of its history, worked with a developer in such a way that public housing is looking to partner with a developer for the Taft project, to your knowledge?
The River West project was, I don't know if they would call it a co-developer or a developer in that particular and you could probably do a little research on how Warner Homes turned into River West.
Right.
The city was a participant there, as I said earlier, with some TIF financing through there and some other support.
About 14 years old. But River West is about 14 years old
now. And I've only been here
now.
For eight, so I'm not aware of all the details. But, you know, we're willing to be helpful where we can be. And, sure. You know, but it will be up to the housing authority to find, you know, good alternatives and bring them to us, obviously with our input and advice.
I've heard conversations on different sides of the idea of what the Taft property value might be given its proximity to the Illinois River and the redevelopment that's happening in downtown.
Right. It could potentially be a very valuable piece of property to somebody, to the PHA, you know.
It could be very valuable to the PHA as it moves forward.
Right. I mean, if you were to redo this, if you were going back 50 years, you know, but with all the information we have about our downtown now, would you have taken this 20-acre spot and put 220 low-income housing units on it? I don't think anybody, you know, we kind of look back at the way we did affordable housing, you know, right after you know, World War II and in the 50s and the 60s, and the idea was basically some sort of warehousing of poor folks that, you know, in whether it's Cabrini Green Towers in Chicago or Taft, Harrison, and Warner Homes, and it's an antiquated way of affordable housing development in a community. And in many communities, many larger communities that have real estate pressures that are different than ours, you will find affordable housing units right next door to market rate units. In the city of Chicago, you can't build an apartment building without having some amount of the units reserved as affordable housing. This happens in other communities all the time. And so the question here is, how can we execute a similar thing here in Peoria? But back to the idea of that land, it's obviously, I think, would have some value, as it's 20 acres, is relatively flat. It's not only by the river in downtown, but it's right by the interstate. You know, I-74, so it has great visibility. I think it could be any number of things. I think there needs to be a planning process that goes into those. But the planning process at the moment, I think, would be premature, given that we don't really have a solution for making the land available for something else.
Absolutely. How soon might that happen? I mean, this whole thing is not going to happen overnight.
Right.
It could be a year or two away.
So when will the planning process begin for the...
When might the soonest that be?
I really couldn't tell you.
It's hard to say, isn't it?
I think that the reality is that until the housing authority has a clear line of sight on how they will relocate, you know, they have to have some sort of idea as to how they're going to relocate these housing units. You know, however they're going to do it, however they're going to pull it off. And then we can really start, because there's no point in kind of a master planning process that then we're like, well, that was great, but we weren't able to move these 220 units. So that they're going to stay there. You know, so I think that planning process needs to happen. And it could even happen now. We'd just be doing so at risk that there's no solution, you know, down the road.
Has polite city planning conversation, jargon, so to speak, moved from what used to be called low-income housing to affordable housing? Are those two things one and the same today?
Probably. I like to use affordable housing because low-income has a variety of definitions about what, you know, it's somewhat relative to, you know, anybody else as to what's low-income. I mean, there are definitions of low-income, federal guidelines that say that a low-income household is somebody who, based on their household size, makes 80% or less of the area median income, and a very low income is 60%, and an extremely low income is, like 50 or 40%. Affordable housing, maybe it's a term of art, but it's really about that the tenants who are there spend no more than 30% of their take-home pay on the cost of housing. So that would be any of your rent and utilities and insurance, if that's thrown in there. I mean, that's the definition of affordable housing, is that you shouldn't be spending any more than a third of your salary on where you live.
And isn't that kind of the standard for getting a mortgage as well?
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, in relative terms. But that's when we talk about affordable housing. It's not just for the extremely poor. It's for the working poor and the struggling, you know, lower middle class, and however you want to define it. But that, you know, if I mean, if you just take what your average rents are and then what your average job at, you know, working in the service industry, which are what many of these folks are working in, at least at minimum wage, and you kind of put those things together, the amount that you take home, you know, in any given paycheck versus the amount of money you have to pay your landlord, that's where the problem becomes. And so that's why, you know, government policy has been to develop affordable housing so that we don't have a chronic homelessness problem. That's the reverse. If we simply didn't provide any of this housing, we may just have a chronic homeless problem, and that's a different sort of problem that we have. So
I am so sorry that the PHA folks couldn't be with us today, because they would have added greatly to this conversation at the same time.
I think this is a conversation you'll be able to have a few more outside the horseshoe zone. So.
Potentially, yes. Peoria City Councilwoman Denise Moore, Assistant City Manager Chris Setti, thank you both for taking the time to be here.
Thank you.
I appreciate you bringing me here.
You've been listening to Outside the Horseshoe. I'm Tanya Kuntz.